have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
Hello, listeners, lovers, and citizens. Did you miss us? Welcome back to another episode of the Twice as Good podcast. And here we are, your host, Dallas DK Kyle, and my favorite boo thang, MJ Craig.
Woo! Back from the dead.
Ooh. She's back. She's back.
I'm no longer ill. So sorry we couldn't record last week, y'all. Your girl was down bad. I had strep and the flu, and I couldn't speak. So we weren't going to be able to record because DK said that she would have had to tell y'all there was a special guest because I sounded like a man. So we decided not to record and just come back a week later. So here we are.
Well, we here at the podcast believe in wellness and self-care as a right and not an option. So one, we want a high quality podcast, but also two, you gotta take care of yourself. So I'm glad that you're back.
Yeah. I gave myself 7 days to get myself together. And after day seven, I was like, listen, body, come hell or high water, I'm getting back to my life. Antibiotics are done. Cough drops are in. Mask is on. You're no longer contagious. We getting back to back in. So I was in Texas last week, drinking, smoking, back to life.
That poor body.
When John Mayer wrote the song, Your Body is a Wonderland, he was talking about Jennifer Love Hewitt, and he was not talking about me, okay? My body is a temple, but it is not Machu Picchu. Temples don't have to last forever around here, okay? We need this body to make it to like 75. Damn. And I'm good.
Listen, I'm just glad that you're back and healthy and your voice is still intact. A lot has gone on in the administration, and we're going to get to some of those things. Just want to give you guys a heads up. We're going to remix this episode. We're going to be trying some new things out. We've gotten some feedback from our dedicated listeners. We know that you guys love our analysis and feedback on the show and how it relates to real life. So we're going to try to expand on that while still weaving in the relevant political topics of the day. So as you are listening and hearing, we really do want you guys to listen and give us some feedback because this show is for you. I think while we both enjoy talking to each other in a curated modality, I could just call MJ and talk for a few hours if that's what we want to do. So this show is for you guys. So as you're listening, you know, feel free to be like, nah, this is not hitting. Y'all need to find a day job or, yeah, maybe.
Never quit mine. But yeah, this show, it's all because of you're my sunshine after the rain. You're the thing against my fear and my pain. And I'm losing my mind when you're not around. It's all because of you. That song used to be the jam.
The song.
That's really the only song from them I know too. So, but shout out to Nick Lachey because they had that one song and he's still around.
They had mine's is the one with Stevie Wonder. True to your heart, you got to be true to your heart. That's my with the harmonica in the background.
Stevie 98 Wonder. Degrees has a song with Stevie Wonder.
Mulan? The Mulan song?
Oh, okay. Never mind. That's different. That's not the same thing. Soundtracks don't count because a lot of people get put together on soundtracks. It would be different if you told me that like Stevie Wonder just happened to have a song with 98 Degrees just like randomly. I'd be like, were they on the same record label?
No. 98 degrees on Motown?
That, exactly. So what makes more sense is a soundtrack happened and Disney, because that does sound like some Disney shit, decided to put them together.
Shout out to Disney, because I'll just say, you know, because of your sweet melodic voice, I jammed out. But I didn't know what the fuck you were singing. But when you said Nick Lachey, I said, oh, I got a little 98 degree song that I like. I do like True to Your Heart. That's my shit. I be like, True to Your Heart, you got to be true. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm in my bag with it.
It's all because of you. That's like, I think that's like their one song.
I don't know if you see, you don't watch Love is Blind, but on the very first season of Love is Blind, Nick Lachey comes in with his wife, whose name I can't remember. And
Vanessa
he says,
Lachey.
Yes. They come in the room and they introduce themselves to the contestants. And he says, and of course, I'm Nick Lachey. And when I tell you the internet lit him up and said, and of course, sir, you haven't had a hit song since the early 2000s. No one knows who you are.
No. Let's not do that to Nick Lachey.
Everybody was like, stop it.
It'd be one thing if Nick Lachey like started on reality. Like, it would be one thing if it was like, oh, he started on The Bachelor and then he was one of our faves and that's how we know him. Nick Lachey was also one of the first, was part of a couple that was one of the first major couples on reality TV, him and Jessica Simpson.
And it was Jessica Simpson who carried that whole duo.
Sure was, but that is still a place where we knew him from. He also was a guest star on Charmed. I believe it was season 8 for like 4 episodes. He played Leslie, who was Alyssa Milano's love interest, as a ghostwriter.
Alyssa Milano with the cornrows, Alyssa Milano.
She did not have cornrows on Charmed. So.
Okay, but that tells me everything I need to know.
Listen, you can't, there will be no Charmed slander on this show.
Love Charmed, but I'm just saying, I don't remember those episodes. I will have to go back and review them. I'm just letting you know where I stand.
Yeah, it was either season 7 or season 8. He played a ghostwriter. I think it was season 7 now that I think about it, because season 8 was the last season. I think it was season 7. He played a ghostwriter for Phoebe. Because he was Leslie.
The internet still lit that ass on up and said, know your lane, please.
Damn.
Don't ever play yourself like this again. Because to think that we would just know you is crazy. Well, please open your TV Bibles to season 4, episode 3, when we talk about like father, like daughter. It's about the kids, y'all. I believe the children are our future.
Something, they will lead the way.
I don't remember
Before we get into the episode, I don't know what it is, but whenever people take photos, like whenever Kevin Costner goes somewhere, the internet like rehatches his like amazing eulogy for Whitney Houston.
It was a good one.
And the fact that he was like, she was the love of my life. And people were just like, eh? We didn't know. Shocked. I was like, I remember watching it being like, he just said the love of his life?
Yes. They had a very, so I don't know how, because I love a good YouTube video. When he did his eulogy, I did know that he was, I at most thought deeply infatuated with Whitney Houston. However, if you do a lot of the behind the scenes of The Bodyguard and all the interviews,
that like, part I knew. But could you, like, that's may
love married like at that, the time.
May love like that never find me. My guy, you were married. You and this person were never actually like fully together. And this is the love of your life. Mm-mm. May love like that never find me.
Honestly, that's a mixed couple that I could have got behind. I'm not even gonna hold you.
I don't disagree. I'm saying to call someone the love of your life and you're publicly professing that at their funeral because y'all were never like full, like never truly together. So you just had this unrequited love for like, what are we talking, 30 years?
Probably, yeah, 25 and some change at that point.
May love like that never find me. That's misery. So you just gonna spend the rest of your life wondering what if? Every kid, any kid you had after the bodyguard gonna be like, dang, if it was up to you, I wouldn't even be here. Also, any girl you dated is like, dang, I mean, I guess I'm just here.
Well, he was married, and so was she. So it's a very, like, she had just gotten pregnant after, she was, I think, like,
she was married to Bobby Brown. So Kevin Costner would have been an upgrade.
Anything other than Bobby Brown was an upgrade. But she really loved Bobby, so I'm not.
People love a little toxic, but I mean, I think Kevin Costner is fine as hell.
Love him. Oh yeah, love him. I wanna watch The American Saga. I've heard it's actually an excellent movie.
Yeah, if folks haven't seen Yellowstone, decently good. First like two seasons, three seasons, pretty good. I will say the creator of that show, because I've also seen the like they're creating like a whole universe. The like prequel universe, like the earliest prequel of like the family moving out west, actually stars Faith Hill and Tim McGraw as like the like original matriarchs of the Yellowstone family. It's really cute. Faith Hill does not look like herself. Like I watched it, I was like, who this lady think I played Tim McGraw's wife? And then I looked, I said, Faith, who let them do you like this? With your man. But it was really good. But people who reviewed the show point out that the author has like this really weird like father-daughter, like the father-daughter dynamics on his shows are always really odd. Like they're like on the brink of inappropriate.
Interesting.
But Yellowstone's super good. Beth's my girl. I knew someone like her in real life. She's down bad. She's a bad bitch. But
I like the clips I've seen.
Season 4, episode 3, Scandal.
With me now in your word. When we cast our scene on our fair city of Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, as some might call it. Olivia and Jake are trying to enjoy a normal dinner. Jake has just come from doing some weird ass side mission. Of course, it's important to note that Jake and Olivia are off the island and back out of their little love bubble. So Jake didn't want to come back in the first place.
Sure didn't.
This is an important note that Jake did not want to be here, but he's back and doing some shady shit. But they're trying to enjoy a normal dinner. Olivia gets the call and she swoops in to some wild college party to save Karen, which in hindsight, that's an unfortunate name. She goes to this college party where we find our sweet, beautiful first daughter, not naked, in her bra and panty laying across the bed. And she and Quinn have to like get this girl out of the party. They got Huck shutting down phones, like he canceling cell towers. We on some like post 9/11 Big Brother shit. And
Cyrus helped too because they got that helicopter.
Yes, like they got the helicopter, and you know they're on the helicopter. They get her dressed, they get her out, and Olivia's giving her a big scolding, like, "Girl, get your life together, honey."
My favorite part is when Karen is like obviously drunk and is trying to like tell Olivia what to do. And she's like, "I don't work for you. I work for your father." She's like, "This is a favor. I'm doing you a favor."
She's like, You're not gonna fix it. She said, absolutely not. This is your job. Oh, because she wanted her to talk to her dad. And
she said, no, I don't work for you. Right now, I don't work for any of these people. I don't work for your dad. I don't work for you. I don't work for the White House.
This is a favor. Not only that, but as she's scolding her, something pops on Karen's phone. Karen's like, oh, shit. Hands the phone to Olivia. And Olivia's like,
oh my God.
Hits her cell phone and says, Cyrus, wake up. I have
wake
seen
the president up now.
Like, and they're like, he has Africa in the morning, something, something, something. And she's like, I'm watching
the most vile thing I have ever seen. And it involves his daughter. Get
and
him
two
up.
Two boys.
Now.
I just want to pause here because
I had to Google because I was like, what? First of all, what the fuck is an Eiffel Tower? When this first came out, not now.
Yeah.
When this first came out.
Yeah, because I was still in high school.
Was I still in high school? I think I was in college. I can't remember. But I was just like, what did she do? Because when she said the most vile thing she's ever seen, I said,
yeah, that's where I want us to, I just want to spend a little time pontificating about where, what was on. Besides that, because now that I'm an adult and I've lived a little, I've never done what I think Karen has done on that sex tape. However, you know, I have friends who have different sexual experiences. So I am very well versed in what could have happened.
You never looked up what an Eiffel Tower was?
No, I just let somebody tell me. I keep telling y'all, I grew up in a good Christian home with a good Christian mom. We had all the locks on it. I saw it. I mean, someone told me, someone described it about what that was. And I said,
so that's what Olivia saw.
But maybe there was other things on the tape. You thought that's
what
they was only
doing?
No,
that's what she saw.
Is that vile? Or maybe, I guess for a teen.
If, like, one, Olivia is a grown-ass woman who is sleeping with presidents, with Jake, with Edison. She's not engaging in sexual activity like that. And
you got room to talk based on what you're saying. Go ahead.
And she, like, this is Karen, the president's daughter.
Someone she's known since she was small. Okay.
Yes. I could understand that being the most vile thing you've ever seen. Because one, like, without getting too graphic for people who are listening, Karen was in a threesome. So, with two men. I understand if, like, I could understand Olivia being utterly shocked by what she likely saw in that video.
Yeah.
And probably a little disgusted, but, like, mostly just shocked.
Probably the most vile. So this brings me to my question is, when we think about the role of presidential kids, because we've touched on the role of first ladies, like of spouses, of political spouses, what we believe or perceive their job to be. What do we think about political children, specifically the children of the president? I think anybody's child, we've seen a couple senators' children, a couple, you know, House of Reps' children, they pop up on the radar, then they kind of pop off. But really, the kids that we do see in the news are your Jenna and Barbara, your Hunter, your Bern, you're Malia and Sasha. That's how she says that voice.
You love saying a parent's name like that.
That's how she pronounces her son's name. I'm being
dead. I saw an article today that the president of the NYU Young like College Republican chapter got dismissed because he made some comments about Baron, as you say it. Baron.
You know, I think while I definitely don't agree with that, her politics or her choice in spouse, I
here we go. Do
love Ivanka's style. And I do think she has a very seductive voice. So
you mean Melania? I knew the comment was gonna be whack either way. But the least you could have done was say the right person.
See, that's how much I pay attention to those people. I'm just telling you.
I'll say this. When it comes to... if they are under 18, I think it is hard. Like, if you are under 18, unless you're out here doing, like, some BS and you're out here being wild, I don't think it's fair for the public to ridicule and critique you because you're of the roles your parents chose. And I feel the same way about like Blue Ivy and like, mm-hmm. like now that they're like Blue Ivy's out here doing movies, Northwest is out here on fucking TikTok and doing all the time and doing rap songs and whatever. But like when they were small kids who mm-hmm. honestly were basically accessories for their parents, like mm-hmm. they don't get to control where they're going. They're not getting to say yes or no, I don't want to do this thing. I feel like it is very unfair to critique them. Mm-hmm. But if they're actually bad, or once they turn like 16, 17, man, fuck them kids. You're old enough. You're old enough. Once you're grown, I'm going to talk about you like I would anybody else.
I can agree to that to a certain extent. I will say, as someone who had, I think, an ounce of that feeling, like, for those of you, I have alluded to that my parents were in ministry. My stepdad was a pastor. So I know what it's like for people to watch your every single move and then like report or gossip about it. It's a very weird experience because it's just like, if I was anybody else, you wouldn't care. Like you, but to be the topic of conversation of adults is, I do try to mind my P's and Q's when it comes to like public children, because it's just like, I do think, to a certain extent, kids should be allowed to make mistakes because that is what childhood is for you to make those critical mistakes to be corrected so that when you're an adult, you're not out here being crazy. Like, I think that is what childhood is for you to learn and understand the world, be corrected, and then when you're an adult, be able to make the smart decisions and choices that you're expected to make. And to your point, if you're not allowed that level of privacy that you normally get by just being a private citizen, because it's important to note that these kids are private citizens. They are not public people. Okay. I disagree, but because if you just said,
I agree with you on kids should get to be kids to an extent, because there are a bunch of people under 18 who are in prison and being charged as adults for decisions they made. I also think that unfortunately for these children, you were born to who you were born to. So you are not a private citizen. If you are the child of the president, you're not a private citizen. My tax dollars pay for you to go to school and back. My tax dollars pay for the food that you eat every day.
Actually, food expenses are for the private are actually private expenses.
So the chef that works in the White House, who pays for the chef?
I guess the chef's salary is technically paid, but you have if it's not for a state dinner, that comes out of
their salaries.
Yeah, their salaries.
The salaries who are paid by who? Salaries that are paid by who? All I'm saying is, like, I agree with you.
You eating the nuggets that my chef made.
Facts. Like, I agree with you that, like, these are kids. Unfortunately, you were born to the people you were born to. And even for the pastor's kids, because at the end of the day, they're not judging the children because of who the child is. They're judging the children because of who their parents are. And because their parents are in a position where they are telling other people how to raise their kids, whether it's a pastor or an elected official. Michelle Obama was out here telling people that their children need to eat healthier because their kids aren't eating good food.
She's calling these kids fat, quite frankly.
Right. So if every day, so for you to talk about healthy eating, for you to talk about, like, people need to be eating healthier, kids, like, parents need to be making healthier decisions for their kids, and your 17-year-old chain smoking, like, she's a union worker, like, she's a union worker in fucking Boston. She's allowed to do that. But people are going to say something. The only reason y'all even got dogs was because your husband had to promise to quit smoking. That was how y'all got dogs. That was the deal. He becomes president. You got to quit smoking. That's how y'all get these dogs. You got the dogs. He quit smoking. Malia didn't even make it to 18. And she out here hitting a box of Virginia Slims. Every fucking day. So people are going to judge and critique you. They're going to comment and have questions because your parents just told me that my kids don't eat healthy.
And side note, I wanted to know, I'm like, what kind of stress do you have going on that you're out here smoking, like, non-filtered Virginia Slims? Do you know how strong your lungs gotta be to smoke Virginia Slims?
You know what's funny about it? I'm sure she does have stress, because at the end of the day, like, there's so many things that teenagers, especially because, you know, private schools be wild. There are probably so many things she wanted to do, was trying to do, and Secret Service just be all up in her business. Can't have no peace.
And your mama's Michelle.
And your grandmama living with you, too. You ain't got no peace. So, please. I hear you. Because I have friends who were pastors' kids, who were elected officials' kids, who were, like, whose parents were in prominent positions, and it put the focus on them. And I feel bad for them. But sometimes as kids, you got to bear the sins of your father. And that's the sin. They chose to live a public life, and a public life where they are passing, not even passing judgment, literally passing legislation. True. To tell other people how to raise their children. So I'ma watch how you raising yours.
Hey, well, they say your first ministry is your family. So I think it's important to highlight some notable. I talked about some before, and we just talked about Malia and her smoking habit, which I think is hilarious.
My daughter.
That's literally. Chelsea Clinton. Y'all dragged that little girl when she was young for film.
That was fun.
Y'all refused to let her just, like,
grow into her face, glow up.
Y'all dragged her by her braces. Y'all did not. Yeah.
That kind of stuff is fucked up, because at the end of the day, she's a kid. She was like 13.
Yeah, the Bible says I don't have a heaven or hell to put y'all in, but I'm just saying, those of you who had something to say about Chelsea Clinton during her teenage years, God will be judging you accordingly. No. Jenna and Barbara.
Less he who is not sin, cast the first stone.
And I'm not
some of y'all look dusty as hell when you were young too.
I would hate for y'all to see my senior photo. Hence why I keep my mouth shut. Jenna and Barbara, the underage drinkers, using those fake IDs.
See, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Dad.
Your dad is a recovering alcoholic who does not drink. Who is sending 18-year-olds out to war.
Yeah.
These people are coming home in caskets and as amputees before they could legally drink. But y'all out here getting fake IDs to go get twisted. 100% people are going to have feelings, comments, and conversations about that. Because it's not about you. It's about the fact that you are the children of this person. And this person is making these decisions. But look at his kids.
Yeah. No. True. Malia and Sasha. We already talked about Malia's chain smoking. I think Sasha, I don't have too many memories. She pretty much stays under the radar, just being a baddie. So
she minds her business.
She's like, I don't smoke and I'm fine. So, you know, she's like, I got my mother's hips and ass, so I'm good.
Let's not do that with a 19-year-old girl.
Sure. She's older than that now, but she's gorgeous. I'm sorry.
She is very gorgeous. She is very gorgeous.
And as a heterosexual woman, I'm just, yo, I believe that she's pretty, just like I think that you're cute.
Let's talk about the Trumps and the Bidens.
Baron Beron.
Well, he's the youngest. I think this is an example now. Right. But the first time around, he was younger. I think the Trumps and the Bidens are an example of your kids are grown. We gonna talk about your kids.
Because I'm gonna be honest.
Both families were messy.
Yeah, they said Hunter used to go down to Southeast in the 90s and buy crack. So
he got with his brother's widow.
I just want to say RIP Bo, because he was the hope for that family.
He was, and he was so fine. He was so fine.
I'm gonna let you have your moment.
Bo was so fine. He was. I just messy.
One's a crackhead, the other a dumb and dumber. I think the only one that I can halfway tolerate, because
I'm sorry, when you said one's a crackhead, are you moving over to the Trumps?
I said what is I was more or less making a general statement, but you know, what I said was one was a crackhead and the other two were dumb and dumber.
Got it. Okay.
Place those monikers where you want them to fit. You know, I hope he gets the help that he needs. But I just want to say, I'll say this about the Hunter Biden situation. If Hunter Biden was my son, he's getting a pardon. I feel how you feel about it. But
especially seeing how this admin is going. Fuck
exactly.
Me.
I would. No one who is a parent can sit here and tell me that they would just let their child be at the hands of their known adversary. And if you tell me you would let your child be at the hands of your known adversary to be used as a political pawn,
I don't believe you're not a good parent. You don't like that kid.
Yeah, you hate that kid. And you're not a good parent. Sorry, not sorry. And thus saith DK.
Yeah.
But
I think the Trumps are interesting in that, one, that whole family, a lot of the values ain't matching the reality going on there.
The values
ain't astute, don't match the reality presented to us.
I will say that Ivanka is the only one that I can halfway stand. I think that I often, what I got from Ivanka was that she was a New York person. That, and when I say that, she was a New Yorker in the sense of she was a working mom because she worked for several years. I don't know what her job was exactly, but according to her, she worked. And don't give me that face. The lady said she worked, so I'm going to take her.
You don't remember that Quincy Jones story? Where he said that one day he went out for, he was talking about how he knew Trump and how they, went out for dinner one day and Trump tried to get him to sleep with Ivanka. And he was like, Ivanka had a killer set of legs on her, but there was some reason he said he wouldn't do it. Something about her dad being crazy or some shit like that.
I did not know this was a story.
Yes. And after that, I was like, whole family trash.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to speak to the things that I know because I didn't know that was a story. Because she did try to highlight things that I could get behind. Mm-hmm. Like the expanding childcare for working parents, you know, paid family leave, things of that nature. So I do think that she had some more social policy. She had some thoughts around social policy in regards to the family that I could get behind. But other than that, I thought she was caping for her daddy, and I just couldn't. Her husband got on my last nerves. I was just like, so glad.
Do you think that any of those platforms that she talked about were real? Because none of, they didn't do anything with any of them. Like, she talked about them, but,
no.
They didn't become
That's why I was just, halfway can stand. There was no legislation behind it. There was no actual policy. However, she did raise the issue, and I guess that's a step, but
I think it was fake. The same way Melania wrote that book talking about how she pro-choice, 3 weeks before the election, and we haven't heard of her say nothing about that thing since.
Listen, but I will say And some people have the same critique about Hillary Clinton when she was first lady trying to take on healthcare policy. The same thing we say about political spouses, no one elected you. And that's the only problem with having adult children involved in these spaces is that no one elected you. Never. And I do think that if you're family, you should be family. And that was one of the things that I really appreciated about the Obama's family. They were very content on just being family. Mama Robinson said, hey, I'm here helping around the house, showing people around, and call me when you want me for a photo. I'm happy to hop in. May she rest in peace. And her brother was like, hey, I'm leading coaching at Princeton. And I think that when you're in these positions, sometimes just having people know their roles is super important. That my problem with Biden and Trump and their families is their kids wanted to be uniquely involved in the political process. And I'm just
I think I wouldn't bucket those two people together or those two families together when it comes to that. In that, I think Biden is a little closer to the Kennedys, where it's clearly a family business, but for the most part, people are actually sticking to the lakes and the rivers that they're used to.
The only
successful of the women in the family, right? Bo ran for office, though. It's not like Bo.
Yeah,
Trump is out here appointing people in his family. He made Jared Kushner the chair, the head of Middle East peace.
I remember
the fuck, no qualifications, no nothing, just you're gonna chair Middle East peace. And Ivanka, you're gonna come astute all these policies. We're not gonna do anything about them, but I want you to come out. You have kids, come out and talk about things that people with kids like. Hunter Biden, for all his stuff, he was never actually involved in political stuff. Like, he actually wasn't out here moving legislation or doing anything like that. He was in the news because of whatever happened in China and all that other stuff. But the person in the family who was political was Bo. Bo ran for office and won office. That's more similar to the Kennedys. Even RFK, okay. he was appointed to be AG, but he had to go through an appointment process.
Yes. But he was a lawyer.
Right. Like he was qualified for the role and he got it. But they actually, like, those are families that, like, this is a family business. We all gonna be in the business together, but everybody has a role. And you're not gonna get above your bridges.
Well, it does seem that this year, this go round, that the Trump family has said as a unit that the family will just be family. Because I think...
Yeah, I saw Ivanka was not on the campaign trail. We barely...
Oh, no, she literally
sent her son to a baseball game or something with granddad. I was like...
She literally said, I'm a mother and that is all I am. I will be rooting for you on the sidelines. I do want to highlight some other points of the episode that I think is super important.
While you're looking for them, can I give you the quotes from the Quincy Jones story?
Okay. Not you really giving. Oh my God.
Because I was like, no, I don't want people to be unsure if this is true. So in an interview with Vulture, Quincy Jones makes a shocking statement about Donald Trump's oldest daughter, Ivanka. He confessed that he had dated her when she was just 25. In the same interview, the legendary musician did not hold back his opinions on his father, blah, blah. I used to date Ivanka, you know, in quotes. He added that it was Tommy Hilfiger, the American fashion designer, who was working with his daughter, is it Kadita? Kadada? Who told Jones that Ivanka wanted to have dinner with him. Jones mentioned that she had the most beautiful legs he'd ever seen in his life. Wrong father, though.
Okay. RIP to the legend. I'm going to let...
He also called Trump mentally limited, a megalomaniac, and a narcissist, and that he couldn't stand him.
Well... He may be all these things, but you were dating his 25-year-old daughter, so.
Then he stopped because he said she had the wrong daddy.
Exactly. And I would hope that any man who has a daughter who is also my daughter's age would act the way that Trump probably acted. So.
Trump didn't care.
Okay. I mean, sure. One. So after they get this sex tape, we then spend a part of the episode trying to track down. We're threatening people. Quinn is kicking ass and taking names. We get a hold of the parents of the second boy who has the original tape and who taped it. Now, I don't remember their names, but for the sake of this, I'm going to call them Thing One and Thing Two, the Things. These sets of parents decide...
They gave Montgomery County such a bad name.
Yes, because they were, like, living in Bethesda. So I just want you to know... I just want you all to know that Montgomery County, this is who's representing you on TV. They were just like, we want $2.5 million. Olivia goes, has this, like, intense emotional scene that we will not be discussing because at this point, it's just old. And because there are so many of these scenes.
That back and forth. I will say the one thing about that back and forth is that Fitz didn't want to pay the money. And Olivia had to be like, this is literally your daughter's future. It's $2.5 million. You have the money. Cut the fucking check.
Exactly.
And I will say sometimes as a staffer, that's the kind of conversation you got to have with your elected official. You got the money. I mean, not like I've never worked for someone who had a sex tape, like their daughter had a sex tape. But more so, like, there are times where you are staffing or you are working for an elected official. and they are just like going back and forth with you on something, you're like, why are you going back and forth with me on this? Just do it.
So we can move on.
Right. So we can all move on. Just fucking do it. You know that you have to do it. Whether or not you want to do it, it doesn't matter. You know that you have to. So why don't we all just stop playing? You know that you have to do it. You are able to do it. It's not even going to be that deep. Just fucking do it.
Child, you'd be surprised. Well.
They just like to say no to say no. Acting like somebody's parents.
Fitz does agree to cut the check after this very unneeded back and forth. And Olivia goes to corral thing one and thing two, aka the things. And Daddy Thing decides they need an extra 500,000. And
Olivia's like, even three.
Yes. And so, and then they tried to like over, and what they end up doing is overplaying their hand.
Yeah. Because then when Olivia's like, excuse me, they're like, yeah. So that way no one has to find out that the president's daughter's a dirty little slut.
And it was the slut that really fit her. I know for a fact that if
she had a face, she went back, and then she
took a picture of the check, and she took a picture of them, and they were like, what are you doing?
I'm going to destroy you.
And when she's like, it's child porn. You're child pornographers. I said, and now it's
handling. You have no proof. She said, I'll make it up. I will destroy the little piece of, what did she say? The little piece of
dignity, credibility. It was something.
She said, oh, and the people in your life who you think are friends now will erase you from their memories.
And that's the kind.
You two are the worst type of people. People who have everything and still want more. That family lost a son. A son! It was one of her best. It was good.
Big
one. That was one of her best speeches. And then she said, now, sign the NDAs.
So I don't have to look at you like this. Listen, let me just tell you something. When you're at the finish line and you're about to get your comeuppance, this is not the time to get greedy. It's the time to dig in and do what you need to do so we can move on.
Take your 2.5 and keep it pushing. After you have 2.5, what's 500?
You don't even need the money. This is not a family that needed the money.
No, it's greed.
So I do think, one, this gives us a highlight about dealing with principals. I think you touched on it quite clearly. Sometimes you have to keep your principal is so stuck in their way, so stuck in their vision. It doesn't have to be like about crisis communications or crisis management. It could just be about wanting there to be sign waving. And you're just like, sign waving is not a great way to pick up folks, but people love it. The volunteers love waving signs. And you're like, well, this is not a car wash.
It could be calls, yeah. It could be like, you have to call this person. I don't want to call this person. I don't understand why I need to call this person. Blah, blah, blah. We're in call time. Call the person.
So we can move on.
So we can all move on. I'm sure it
could. I will say. And then also handling external stakeholders, especially when you're dealing with crisis communications, crisis management, and you now have to neutralize a threat from the outside. I do think there has to be a point where enough is enough. Like, we're not going to concede but so much ground. And knowing what that threshold is extremely important, because sometimes people like to take your kindness for weakness, or when they see you or your principal in a weak spot.
I'm not going back and forth with you. If I get on the phone, this is the thing I always keep saying in my mind. I'm not negotiating this. I'm going to give you what I like. This isn't a salary negotiation. So I'm just going to give you, this is what I can do. Once you start trying to go back and forth, I'm not going to be like, oh, I got to check with them. Oh, I got to do this. No, this is what it is. Take it or leave it. And if you leave it, good luck. But I'm not going back and forth with you. So if you decide to leave it, it was great to talk to you. Don't call me when I take option B. You've decided you don't want option A. So now I've moved on to option B. And option B means I no longer have to give a fuck about you. I tried, though. Just like Olivia. I tried. I got you your little 2.5. All of a sudden, you decided that wasn't good enough? Got it. So I have my option B, in case y'all weren't acting right. I will literally destroy your lives. And then you go wish you took that little 2.5 and kept your mouth shut, kept it pushing.
No, that's true, because sometimes it's like working with a news outlet and you're just like, hey, we want to give you the exclusive. They want to make a statement. And then now the news outlet wants all this extra. And you're like, that's not what we're giving. Like, we're giving X. And I'm giving you the exclusive. So take it or leave it. Or we're doing Y. And so sometimes, like I said, you have to know what your rules of the road are. What are we willing to concede and what are we not? Because if you don't have a clear strategy when you enter into these conversations with external stakeholders, they will try to bleed you dry because they smell blood. And if you're not prepared to walk away, like with anything in life, you have to be prepared to say,
just hey, walk away.
Like Kelly Clarkson said, you gotta be prepared to walk away. I do want to end this.
Are we gonna talk about Smelly Melly?
Yes. And the conversation that she has around one, I think the conversation that she has with Karen as mother and daughter is important, but I think she also has a conversation around the perception of sex as it pertains to women in America specifically, that I think is an important one. So all while this is happening, Melly is still in her grief.
Griefing. I was gonna say, I would actually want to rewind to the first conversation that her and Fitz have. Cause I know he's not your fave. So I thought you were gonna skip it.
No, I wanted to set the table. Melly is in the back of the house where the residence is. She in her sweat. She in her good therma robe watching TV. She got
dusty Uggs. She ain't even put her foot all the way in. The back done sag.
She got her
a bucket of fried chicken. It's not even good shit. It's not labeled.
Like, this is stuff that they grow at the house. This is stuff they got going at the house. It's not even...
Make it in the back.
This is not that moonshine you get at the liquor store. This is that 180 proof North Carolina shine.
Like, clear. The kind where you look at it and from far away you think it's water, you get close, you say, that'll move like water.
No. So I want to first give a shout out to Melly's liver. And she sees Karen. She's trying to figure out why Karen is in the house.
And Olivia, because she saw Olivia first.
And she was
pissed. She hadn't seen Olivia. And she was like, Olivia.
She was about to run after that lady. She ran like a track star. Like,
what are you doing here? And she said, you should talk to your husband.
And that's how I knew Olivia was done with the both of them. She's like, I'm not even going to answer this stupid ass question. So Melly then collapses into the Oval Office and she proceeds to give Fitz a much deserved, but probably unnecessary cussing out. And Fitz had enough of her shit.
I was gonna say, you know where she went wrong? She started by yelling at him about Olivia. She's like, promise me she wouldn't be here. You promised me she wouldn't come here. What was she doing here? Why was she here?
And she should have just
like, well, you have decided not to do your duties anymore. The baby is calling the nanny mommy because the baby don't see you. I've dealt with Smelly Melly. Can't get out the bed, Melly. Eat fried chicken all day, Melly. Drunk Melly. So yes, Olivia's here because our daughter had a sex tape, girl. And she's cleaning up the mess. Because that's what Olivia does. Cleans up our family's messes.
I will just say, when he called her Smelly Melly, I screamed.
So did I. I said, Fitz, this is where I will agree with you. Fitz had to take care of the family for like 2 months. Couldn't do it.
He was a wreck. I said,
and mind you, take care is like fake because you got all this staff. Again, nanny. He's calling the nanny mommy.
The kids are at board. Well,
sorry. Karen is at
boarding school. Karen is at boarding school.
No, Karen's at, yeah, Karen's at boarding school. Jump it over to university.
Crying.
Boarding 2 months. Yes. You couldn't do it.
So after the revelation happens, Melly has this conversation with Karen. And, you know, one of the things that I loved her approach to it as a woman, because she was just like, if I'm not even angry, right? This is when I wish Melly kind of was in her prime at the episode. I think it's important that she's not, just for the progression of the episode. But I do think it's important to highlight, because I think her approach was so good, an approach that Olivia couldn't catch and Fitz couldn't catch as her father, that she was just like, did you enjoy it? Like, I think
she's like, if this is something, she's like, if you did this because you wanted to and you were excited and you loved it, then like, I love that for you and I'm happy for you. But if you did this because you were sad and because you wanted just to feel something, that's not okay. That's a problem. Yeah.
Write a song. I mean, I think
that's not really Olivia's job to be having that conversation.
No, it's not. But I think that I think that because Olivia is always cleaning up their messes, she usually has unique insight when she is talking them off the ledge, and she kind of grounds everybody. And I love that for Melly to have, because if that was my daughter, and I just want to say to my future child, you know better. You know better. So we ain't even got to say nothing. But if I had a child, that is how I would approach that conversation. Because it's one thing for you as a young adult to experiment with sex. I think that's a conversation to have about responsible sex. What does that look like? What does consent look like? It's another thing to, because Fitz jumped to sexual assault and
he was like, you were raped? Yo, that was a scene.
It was crazy because
he was like, I think, were you assaulted? And she was like, what? No, I wasn't assaulted. And he was like, she was like, I liked it. I asked them to do it. He was about to slap her. He was like, Fitz,
please. Why don't we get her a checkup, please? And a conversation about safe sex. But I think you could just see the difference. And I think one of the things that Shonda does so well is that in everything there is in this show and in How to Get Away with Murder and her other show, and even Grey's Anatomy.
I'm fucking dead. Her other show, the one that's on 20 seasons.
There is this undertone.
Scandal. You know, that show that was on for like 7 seasons, How to Get Away with Murder 5. Then that other show, you know, Grey's Anatomy, her anchor show, the thing that introduces all to Shonda Rhimes. It's on season 20, but that other one, the one with the white woman.
I mean, it's on season 20, so that lets us know what we know about that show. In all of the shows that Shonda Rhimes produces or writes or directly writes on, there is this undercurrent of women taking back their power over their sexuality. And I think when you're having a conversation with a young woman, especially your niece, your daughter, or a young woman in your life, there should be the assumption of, because she didn't say it was sexual assault. She never told Olivia it was sexual assault. Said that. And for Melly to approach it and say, like, is this something that, like, what was the reason for you doing this? Because if this is something that you wanted to do, that's a conversation we can have, and we can have that conversation. But however, I know that we as a family have gone through something collectively where you were really doing this because you needed to feel, and you're not in that. Everybody gets a want, gets a strike. Everybody gets a strike. This has been your strike. You're the first daughter. You got to keep your legs close. And the admonishment wasn't yelling. It wasn't this like automatic victimization that her father tried to do. It was, the approach was level-headed and clear, which Melly hadn't been in a very long time at that point. And I think that that is an important conversation to have with young women who, especially now since polyamory is a thing and relationships look different than what they looked like when that show, when the show came out, when that episode came out, and when we were, when we were young kids and teens, like relationships just look completely different. And I think that the way Melly approached that conversation was actually some of Shonda and Scandal writers' room best work. And it's always very subtle, which I can appreciate. So
do you think that if Melly wasn't in her drunk Melly, smelly belly, fried chicken Melly phase, she would have reacted the same? Because I do think part of the reason she went into the conversation like that is because of the conversation her and Fitz had. Because remember, when Karen did see her earlier, Karen was dealing with her kind of with kid gloves. And she was like, Mom? Like, she was like, why you look like that? And I do think that part of it wasn't like, oh, Fitz like scolded her or was like, you need to get your shit together. But it's also coming from a place of, I'm not in my best place. So like, I'm empathizing with you. Mm-hmm. I also am not really in a place to come in here and start yelling at you and telling you you need to do better, act better, like straight up, no, like close your legs and don't be a slut. Because at the end of the day, I've been walking around this fucking White House in my Walmart's best for,
man, you walked in that Walmart's wrestling
best, in my Kmart's best for like 3 months.
And you walked in the West Wing looking like that. I think I completely.
Dusty Uggs. Like, you could tell she wasn't putting her foot all the way in the shoe. Robe had stains, eating cereal all fucking day. I'm like, I know she's not showering. I know she's not putting on deodorant.
I will say that, no, I think you're completely right. I think that conversation with Fitz showed her that she wasn't in a place to judge. And she couldn't come in, because I think had my girl been in her prime before,
ooh, she would have came in hot. She would have said, clearly you've been around Olivia too much.
Yeah, she would have thrown some shade. And I think that, you know, also, she also highlighted on how sex and sexuality as it pertains to women is seen. And to your point, she said, you're the president's daughter. You can't afford to be out here having sex like everybody else has sex. You need to keep your legs close. And I think, especially now, that is going to have to be a real conversation that we have with our young women about how they protect themselves first and foremost, right? How they engage in certain relationships. But I think Trump and the Republicans' worldview, I would guess, about sex and sexuality as it pertains to women is very different from the ones that you and I share. And they have all the leverage and the power.
Our public views. I mean, yes. Privately.
That's between you and Jesus. That's none of my business.
Well, them, Jesus, and FetLife, because I'm sure a couple of them have found their way onto a site or two. If we're keeping it a whole buck.
Yes. They're public views. He did, yes. So I would say this episode, as we close out, because I can't wait to talk about in the comment section, which may be a new segment on the show, I will say that when it comes to people's kids, y'all need to leave them alone. But I do think I'm going to put the onus back where it belongs, and that's on the parents. Don't get yourself out on this campaign trail talking about things you can't back up. Ministry starts at the home. Legislation and policy starts at your home. So before you come out here in 2026 during midterms talking about what we should and shouldn't be doing, please check under your bed, in your closets, and anywhere else.
We can't sing that no more.
No.
Can I stop myself? I would also say protect your kids. Like, I think what we've also seen with like the 24-hour news cycle, with social media, with all this stuff, people are also allowing their public facing children. And I will actually take the example of the Kardashians. Why does North at 10 years old have a TikTok? Why is she putting on makeup? Like, your children will already have to grow up, whether they're celebrity kids or politicians' kids, they will already have to grow up so much faster than the children of private citizens, purely because of the responsibilities that you have now put on their life and the fact that they are growing up in the public eye. Therefore, the least you can do is protect the little innocence that they have left, publicly and privately. And do everything you can to make sure that A, they are not overexposing themselves. They don't have any public social media pages until they're like 16, 17, 18 years old. They're not out here doing whatever the fuck. These people are not their friends. These little, like all these social media people, those are not their friends. And when they do mess up or when something does come out, that you do put that hard line. Because I do think something the Obamas also did that I feel like, not that the Bushes or even that like Trump or Biden didn't do, because I think their kids were adults, so it's a little different. I feel like part of the reason that we really didn't talk about Sasha and Malia is like, yeah, they were kids, they weren't really doing anything. I feel like the Obamas also made it real fucking clear, there's nothing to talk about. You're not like, what you bringing up the kids for? How are Sasha and Malia? They're good. They're in school. They're doing great. School's good. Anyway, we're here to talk about legislation. Let's talk about how I killed Osama bin Laden. Like, they were very clear to set that boundary of like, I'm working. I decided to take this job for work. My children are children. You want to ask them how, like, you want to ask me about how school's going for them? Absolutely. But these kids are not for public discussion. So mind your business. And I think it's on the parents to set that boundary, not society. Because you saw what happened. People are out here talking about Blue Ivy's edges, and we still ain't getting photos of the twins. We only see them when we see them.
Y'all really messed that up for all of us, because I really like... The Carters actually make very beautiful kids. So there you go. Thanks for messing that up. Yeah. Well, y'all, this has been, that was This Week On. We hope that you enjoyed the expanded version of that. And we are moving into our beta version of this new segment of In the Comment. This might just be a one-off because this post was just so funny that we said we refuse to get off of this podcast until we talk about it. So, Will, Delegate Jeff Long and Governor Moore, please come to the front of the classroom. Come on. Walk on up. It's okay. It's okay.
So, I want to give a little background.
Yes.
I was scrolling on Instagram, and I saw this photo. And it's a photo. It's Black History Month. It's a photo of a bunch of Black male elected officials in the state of Maryland. I say a bunch because it's not all, but it's a chunk. This photo is available on DMV Daily. When you click into the comment section, I will say this. Don't let anybody tell you that Americans don't know what's up. People don't may not care, and they may not go vote, but they're not all reading at a sixth grade level. Because clearly these people in the comments don't play about people's bills. Don't play about their money. Don't play about their budget. Don't play about their coins. Because they'll come for you, and they don't forget. But this photo. Also, it's Black History. Like, my personal comments, shout out to Black men. I love this for y'all. Great photo. There's a couple people missing, and I want to understand why. But why well, could it
it's important to note, like, the photo depicts several Black elected men. If it's not clear for those, because I'm sure many. You're not. It's many Black men who are elected officials. Those of note are, of course, our governor, the mayor of Baltimore City, my mayor, Brandon Scott, and Calvin Ball, the county executive of Howard County, and the organizer of this photo, Delegate Jeff Long from Prince George's in Calvert County, with their colleagues in the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think there could have been a Black woman photo so that way they were able to post both of them together. There are a lot of Black women mayors in the state of Maryland. We had a Black woman county executive who is now a senator. Like, I think you could have done both and posted both to talk about Black excellence. Like Black woman speaker of the house, first Black woman speaker of the house in the country,
first Black woman, first Black person in the state,
first Black person in the state, but nationally first Black woman speaker of the house anywhere.
Oh yes,
like we could have done both. But to the people in the comments point, well, this photo is great. I'm so proud. It's beautiful. Black people, we love it. What are y'all doing? Session is only 90 days. We're getting close to being 40 days in. What are y'all doing? This is what y'all do when y'all taking photos? This is what y'all spending time doing?
I think my disappointment in this photo is there wasn't the background work just wasn't done. Like, you know, you could have said, well, we want to highlight Black men, but the comment, like you're saying, like you're hailing this as a photo of Maryland's Black elected officials. So if it's Maryland's Black elected officials, that also includes women. And this is the conversation that Black women are constantly having about allyship of our Black men in these fights, is that they always want to lead.
Every fucking
and life. They and that Black men want to be the face, the first and the leaders of a movement, when this movement and our collective freedom and justice will only happen in partnership. And that is the message with all of these Black people in this state has to push, that nothing is going to happen with DEI without Black women. Most of the positions that you see occupied in DEI were Black women. They're predominant, like, so.
But you know that a lot of Black men feel a way about that, though. Like, I've heard that even from elected officials before when talking about DEI programs and affirmative action and, like, diverse hiring practices, mm-hmm. that many Black men feel like when companies start using that language, it's not mm-hmm. to their advantage. Because they will always come second to Black women, because Black women are both women and Black. So it's like double the diversity of one person. Like, this is how they think of it. they're like, oh, if they're hiring for a position and, you know, they're trying to promote diversity, they want a more diverse workforce, blah, 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 they're going to pick a Black woman over me because she is both a woman and Black. So to corporate America, that's diversity. So they are starting to feel like they are getting left out in the cold in some of these conversations because corporate America will choose Black women over them. I remember the first time someone said that to me and I was like, well, I understand how statistically that's how it may feel. Like the numbers may show that to you, and not even the numbers like rejections versus hires, but just like the number of Black women who have secondary, post-secondary, triple, quadruple degrees, 15 different.
We just outnumber. We're the most educated
group. Right. We outnumber you in the workforce because we outnumber you in the workforce. We outnumber you in senior positions because we outnumber you in the qualifications for senior positions. But I think to them, it's, oh, white corporate America is going to choose a Black woman over me.
No, when these positions were created, these were positions that folks needed, one, advanced degrees. And we know that the statistics for people having advanced degrees, period, is somewhere around like maybe, I'm throwing out numbers, so feel free to correct me. It's somewhere probably what, like 10%? And then like, the numbers for Black people having advanced degrees is somewhere like in the single digits. I'm going to say 3-5%. And of those, it's predominantly Black women who have those degrees. DEI usually requires that someone has an HR background of some kind, because you're usually dealing with the hiring practices of a company as well for other positions. And most folks in HR are traditionally women. And I think that the other part of nuance is, and I'll just say this boldly, when it comes to thinking about the collective and the whole, Black women usually are the ones who are doing that. And I think even outside of DEI, women usually are think collectively, like they think about the group there. It's a very, women traditionally are very communal people. So they usually think about the we instead of the me. And I hear Black men when they say that, but I will say one of the things that, one of the hiring practices that I won't attribute it directly to Black women, but I will say in the spaces that I have been in, I have seen Black women advocating for this, where there doesn't need to be a degree and we can just hire for someone who's actually graduated high school. I have seen traditionally either women or Black women advocating for that policy in companies, because they know that most men in America today are usually only have a trade, a high school diploma, and or just an undergrad degree, and do not have advanced degrees. I'll say that from that perspective, looking at this photo, that's one reason. Second of all, Anthony Gregory Brown, Esquire, is not in this photo. And let me just be very clear, and I think anybody in that photo will agree that it's Anthony Gregory Brown Esquire that is leading the charge.
Don't forget the D at the beginning. It's like Ohio State. The.
Very much. The Honorable. Let me back it up. The Honorable Anthony Gregory Brown Esquire, Attorney General of the State of Maryland, former Lieutenant Governor, and Combat Army Vet.
And Congressman.
I'm leaving stuff off. State senator, like delegate, like all the things, is the leader is carrying the load on combating what's happening at the federal level.
Has filed them lawsuits out
several lawsuits to date.
expeditiously.
Since January 20th, my man has been at the courthouse filing lawsuits. The girls at the attorney general's office working overtime.
Because he's and hiring up, they are staff. Every time I go on LinkedIn, there is an AAG position. Got a new role.
Because he said, we're coming. We're coming here on behalf of the people. Is joining several collective actions with other attorney generals across mm-hmm. the country. And I want to actually just kind of give and hold space for our attorney general, because a lot of the work that he is doing is not going noticed because it's happening in the courts and not a lot of people pay attention to that work. And that is the work that is important. He's not doing press conferences like some other attorney generals because he's working. And I do want to uplift him and highlight him. And this is somebody who should have been in that picture. And he's not. And quite frankly, he should have been standing in the front next to our governor.
I mean,
because
to your point, he is working. So while I didn't think of this before, it could have been because he was at work. But they also could have just like taken the photo on the weekend or something.
You could have not taken it at all and actually been working, because I've actually been told that this photo was taken while others were in committee, because there are several other Black men who are not in this photo, and there was a voting session for many other delegates. So I've been told. So,
well, should we each read off two of our favorite comments?
Oh, yes. Yes. Ah, I found one, then I'll let you start, because I found one, then I lost it.
Okay.
Where'd I go? Ooh, I found mine.
Okay.
I found my first one.
So, one commenter said, who cares about this? Taxes are high. Our state budget is fucked. Energy bills are soaring. How is diversity going to fix that?
Life is too dope, states the following. I didn't care what this y'all acting like. Y'all are doing something with Maryland, $3 billion in debt. Fix that. Instead of taking pictures, y'all ain't standing on anything but $3 billion worth of debt. And you expect Trump to take y'all serious? Where's our tax dollars going? That's what I want to know.
That's what I said last week.
He said, y'all standing, y'all ain't standing on nothing but three. He blew my back out with that one. Because that is crazy. People read.
The people are reading.
Straight Shooter 202 said, nice pick, but unite to fix that budget deficit that the governor created. Unite against the criminals that's out here killing people, kids, family, carjacking, robbing, and selling poison to our cities. Unite to bring down them high property taxes and BGE bills. Salute emoji.
Where's the other one I saw?
Unite on that.
Oh, period. the first one that actually has a lot of likes. So I'm just saying, can we fix these Pepco and WSSC bills? Since y'all out here trying to fix stuff.
Listen, the reading level might be at sixth grade, but the boys and girls in the DMV know exactly what's going on. And I will say that, to your point, MJ, people are watching. People are watching, and it's going to take more than some good-looking Black men, and they are good-looking, in a photo to demonstrate to not only Marylanders, but the American people that our elected officials care about what we're doing. And while I appreciate the sentiment, but to the point of House Money Monty, good look, but now what is what I'll say to that. Now what?
I mean, so a friend sent me this today. Oh, let me find it. I was like, ugh. This is some national level. So this is from Democrats. This is written by Kyle Tharp. And the post is from a blog that he calls Chaotic Era. And he talks about the most powerful elected official in the Democratic Party at the moment uses a flip phone and does not send emails. I don't do emails. I get them, but I don't do them. As U.S. Senate Majority Leader, or Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer is one of the most visible representatives of the Democratic Party's brand and platform. And yet, embarrassingly, so unbelievably bad, horrific, are just a few of the words used by senior Senate Democratic staff to describe Chuck Schumer. Criticisms have centered on both his style and substance, his lack of understanding of modern media environment, and his inability, at least initially, to stop or slow down at the confirmations at every chance for Trump's nominees. People are paying attention. They have quotes in that article from random people on the street. Over the next few years, I'm not talking about, like, maybe they'll vote. That one, I don't know. But people are paying attention to what their elected officials are doing and not doing. Both in terms of, can you do a press conference without chanting, I believe that we will win? Because I saw that foolishness. It was like, what is happening? Or you're in session taking photos, talking about DEI, Black men leaders or Black leaders, Black History Month. But what are you actually doing for Black people during Black History Month besides taking this photo? How are you making sure that my cost of living is going down? How are you ending redlining? How are you fixing the butterfly effect in Baltimore? Like, you want to show Black excellence? You're an elected official. Make my life more excellent. I'm Black. Shit.
You know, I agree. And I hope that while there was a lot of laughing and us being trolls, I really do think that in addition, we are also saying that we have the expectation that our elected officials, especially many of whom we've helped get into office, are taking...
Some I don't.
I'm going to let you head it. But also that you all take this seriously. This is a very serious issue. People, the housing market already is, and then we'll move on to on this day in history. DC's housing market is also already seeing the effects of
the federal layoffs.
Bad. And guess what? I was talking to an elected official from Prince George's County when I realized that a majority of the income for Prince George's County is housing.
Mm-hmm.
And 70% of the makeup of Prince George's County are federal workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the administration has already said and stated that they are just at the beginning of downsizing the federal government. Most of that workforce that's going to be affected is going to come to Prince George's County first, Montgomery County second. What is the state of Maryland going to do when its two biggest counties, people living in those counties cannot afford to live there anymore? What are you going to do on top of a $3 billion deficit when
whole tax base is gone? The pressure is getting worse.
So the picture was nice, but now what? Because this is, we're only at the beginning. We're not even 100 days in.
Bro, 100 days. We're not a month in yet. It hasn't been a month since this manifest we're in. That is insane. We're not even 30 days into this bullshit. And my back is hurting.
So... Y'all get it together. MJ, take us into On This Day.
On This Day in History. Actually, On This Day in History, on February 17th, because we were originally going to record yesterday, U.S. Congress elected Thomas Jefferson as president after a tie with Aaron Burr. If you've seen Hamilton, you know, like, a quarter of the story. If you haven't, it's okay, because you should have learned it in history class. And if you didn't, we'll go through it super quick. The Electoral College and the states had a tie. So they had to take it to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives decided to elect Thomas Jefferson instead of Aaron Burr, which, if you look at what happened during Thomas Jefferson's term, he was a slave owner, so we don't celebrate him. But he did do the Louisiana Purchase, as someone who's going to Louisiana later this year. Thank you. But the westward expansion of the United States, Louisiana Purchase, that was all him. One of his slaves also brought mac and cheese to the United States. So shout out to Sally Hemings' brother. He's a real one. So then after the House of Representatives elected Thomas Jefferson instead of Aaron Burr, Aaron Burr got mad, got into a fight with Alexander Hamilton, and hit him with the blicky. February 20th, George Washington created the Postal Service. So it's kind of wild to think, after all these years, our elected officials act like the Postal Service is a complete waste of money and a shit show, when it literally has been here basically as long as the United States has existed. And the Met Gala, the New York Metropolitan Gallery exhibit, opened on February 20th, 1872. Very excited for the Met Gala this year. Their theme is like black menswear, like historic black menswear. So we're thinking Harlem Renaissance, we're thinking beatnik, we're thinking Black Panther, old school, classic, slim, double breasted. It's giving Malcolm X when he was red. That's what we're going for, and I'm very excited to see it. Boom.
Bam. Well, thank y'all. Our goal was to shorten this episode. We did not mean that.
We were running and success was faster. We didn't catch it.
Well, thank y'all for joining another episode of the Twice as Good podcast. MJ, take us out, babe.
Thank you so much for listening to the Twice as Good podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen. Follow us on Instagram at @twiceasgood_podcast, on X at @twiceasgood_pod, and check out our website, twiceasgoodpodcast.com, for more information. All opinions shared today are those of MJ Craig and Dallas Kyle. We are not affiliated with or paid by any political party or political group in order to produce this content. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.